comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's alright.
Welcome back. You're listening to Time Smart Talk with Steve-O. George Harrison, the least appreciated Beatle.
But the best sounding.
Well, one of the best sounding. Also, just, you know, everything was about Lennon and McCartney, but Harrison, he was the real deal.
Yep.
But, you know, I digress. Here Comes the Sun. That's our theme music for our guest, Vaughn Woodruff. He's the owner of InSource Renewables. And he's also been an instructor talking about renewable, sustainable energy, solar. Welcome to the show, Vaughn.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
What do you think about, is that the right intro song for you?
Yeah, it's a nice one on a rainy day to get a little George Harrison.
You had to bring up the rain. Golly. I mean, here we are in June, and I think I already saw an ad for new snowplows.
No.
Yes.
I don't want to hear it.
We literally had snow here on the first day of May. There was still some snow. And this past year, there was some snow on Halloween, last day of October. So we really only have 4 months.
That's about it.
And, so right now there's listeners. There's got to be, you know, all of our two or three listeners. And when I say that, there's a factor of 1,000. So there's tens of thousands of you out there. They're all looking at the radio going, did Steve-O just talk about snow?
Did he dare?
Yeah, I know. And it's all because Vaughn brought up the rain outside. So, Vaughn, it's your fault. Your fault.
Lots of things are. So.
Okay. Well, we want to talk about solar. We want to talk about Maine. We want to talk about how we're one of the least energy-efficient states in the country, and maybe the world. We're obviously one of the first settled areas in the country, so that has a big thing to do with it. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about your background and what brought you into kind of the renewable space and where you grew up and that type of thing. And then we'll talk about your work and, you know, your position on renewable and solar energy.
Certainly.
So where'd you grow up?
The lovely town of Pittsfield, Maine.
Oh, sweet, sweet Pittsfield.
Sweet Pittsfield.
So you're one of the real Mainers.
Yeah, you could say so. My family's been here for 6 generations, and I was one of the kids that went away and was lucky to come back home. So,
where'd you go away to? Where'd you go to school?
Well, I went to University of Maine. I got an engineering degree. Like many Central Maine kids, I moved down to the Portland area after I got out of school. I was an engineering student up at UMaine, worked for a consulting firm in Gorham, and then moved out to California, Colorado, Montana, before I finally moved back.
What part of California were you in?
I was in Southern California, between Palm Springs, out north, Joshua Tree National Park, and then up in the Redwoods as well. So,
well, the natural part, I was in Laguna Beach for a while, and I took up surfing.
And I'm sure you were great.
Apparently, if you're tall and somewhat heavy, there's a whole center of gravity thing that makes surfing particularly dangerous and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I love it, you know.
It's good for turtling waves. Getting out of the waves when you're big. That was...
Well, it's, people have said I'm also good for ballast, so when it comes to boating. Not that funny, ladies. Not that funny. Not that funny.
No, you're right.
Yeah, but the ballast issue is, you know. Did I tell you the story? And again, we digress. But have you ever been in a blimp? No, not many people have. You know, I haven't even met another person that's been in a blimp. But 4 or 5 years ago, we worked with Olympus as a client, and we were managing all of their U.S. Open activation marketing, and DirecTV had a blimp, and so they said, hey, do you want to come up in the blimp and take pictures? So we took off from Caldwell, New Jersey, is where they staged the blimp for New York, and we had to take off at 4 p.m. for a 7 p.m. match at the U.S. Open, and the match was Federer, so it was a big match. It was going to be a televised thing, and when you go to the blimp place, you think blimps of being high-tech. Mm-hmm. But it's this little gondola that looks like a World War II submarine glued to a giant inflatable thing. And then you get these giant fan engines glued to the side of the gondola, which is like the thing. But it was fun. So there's a captain, right? Then there's a guy in the back who's manning the camera. For this case, I think it was CBS. And then there's another guy managing the signage on the side of the blimp. And then there was me. And when you take off at 4 p.m., and we weren't scheduled to get back till midnight, they tell you in advance, bring 2 Gatorade bottles with you, one of them empty.
Oh.
You know where I'm going.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go too deep on that because we're okay. on broadcast radio.
Okay.
We're on WLOB, right?
Yes.
Both AM, 1310, and FM. So
yes.
This isn't satellite where I can go into detail. But you go up, and it's four dudes flying in a blimp for 8 hours,
wow.
and it's loud as anything. But here's the story, because we're talking about ballast. Before we talk about solar, and there is a thermal element. So we take off, right? And we take off New Jersey, and then we go over around Manhattan, and they call the Statue of Liberty the old lady. So yeah, everyone's wearing avionic headphones, and you hear the pilot go, Airtron, LaGuardia Tower, this is Airship 1. How do you want us to head? Airship 1, this is LaGuardia. Take a left, go down by the old lady and take a left. And they refer, so it's a navigational beacon, go around the old lady.
Wow.
And you're a little bit like, hey, that doesn't really sound right.
Yeah.
So we get to the U.S. Open, right? And we're hovering around, and I'm sitting there because I'm going to do photography. And it's me and these other three dudes, and we're all holding Gatorade bottles, one full, one empty. And I hear, because we're all wearing headphones, right? So half the time you're hearing internal communication.
Right.
Not half the time, a third of the time you're hearing. A third of the time you're hearing a producer from CBS going, Airship 1, go to the north side, we need to get a shot, go over the court. And then a third of the time you're hearing air traffic control. So all of a sudden, we're floating around. It's about 6 p.m. and 5:30, and it's before the match, and it's loud as anything. And I'm like the odd guy out. These other three guys are used to the whole Gatorade bottle thing, and I'm just sitting there kind of like not trying to make eye contact. But anyhow, so finally, I hear through the headset, Airship 1, this is LaGuardia, Ground Control, this is Trey Cunt. Come in, aircraft. Please go to 3,500 feet and go to the north sector. Okay, come back. And then another minute later, Airship 1, LaGuardia, we said to go to 3,500 feet. And then all of a sudden I hear the captain go, air traffic control, we have an issue, a ballast issue. We're not able to go to 3,500 feet. Please explain. We have an extra passenger and we have a thermal weight issue. Okay.
No way.
Yes. So here's the problem.
Oh, my.
As the sun is going down.
Uh-huh.
Right? And, I guess it's helium. I don't even know what the gas is. I know hydrogen didn't work out so well with Hindenburg.
No, it didn't.
You're laughing at the Hindenburg? This is a tough crowd. This is really a tough crowd. You know, what about the horror? So anyhow, as the sun is setting, gas is temperature sensitive.
Right.
And so when they take off in a blimp, there's all these factors. What's the humidity? When's the sun going down? How much weight? Very weight sensitive. So air traffic control and the captain are arguing for 5 minutes. Airship 1, if you're not able to go to 3,500 feet, you're going to have to leave the vector, go to the sector, and you cannot go near the U.S. Open, which is right next to LaGuardia. Okay, we're trying LaGuardia. We've got a big guy on board.
Oh, no.
Here's the problem. 4 weeks earlier, they asked me how much I weighed.
Oh, no.
I thought it was for a promotional T-shirt. I thought they were going to give me, you flew on a blimp, Steve-O. And here is, so I'm thinking medium, right?
Okay.
So I think I said, I weigh about $140. Right?
Sure.
Because, who among us isn't vain, right? I forgot about the temperature. So I told them 140 pounds, and so they did the calculation.
Oh, no.
And I don't weigh 140 pounds. And so I get on the blip, and we literally caused an air traffic crisis.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Just because of Steve.
And finally, at about 6:15, as the sun's going down, and the blimp started to get up to elevation. I think we get to like 3,200 feet.
Wow.
And it was like, air traffic control, this is airship. We're up to 32. Is that enough? Okay, airship, proceed in the vector sector. But it was almost a disaster.
Oh, my goodness.
The takeaway is, when it comes to blimps, probably submarines too, anything where there's ballast, you got to be honest with your weight.
Yes.
And to all our listeners, you've got to be. It's no time for vanity.
No.
We almost crashed the blimp.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, anyway. But there is a solar thermal connection to that.
Yes, there
is. Which brings us back 5 minutes later to our guest, Vaughn Woodruff. So, back to Vaughn, who's the owner of Id Source Renewables. Have you ever heard a story like that? Isn't that fabulous?
That's a fabulous story. I can't say I've ever. Yeah. I've never heard a blimp. That's my first blimp story. My five-year-old will be excited to hear that one.
Oh, it's unbelievable. We've got pictures online, too. And then, to digress some more, since you did the opening right there, on the way back, they got permission to fly over Manhattan because it's restricted airspace.
Sure.
You know, air traffic, and this is 8 hours later, so it's like, now that you've forgiven us for having the big guy on board, can we get cleared to go over Manhattan on our way back to New Jersey? Hold on, Airship One. Okay, you're cleared to go over the city.
Wow.
And we were literally under the highest point of the Empire State Building.
Wow.
And you're just kind of floating across the city.
How cool.
The guys had forgiven me by then.
That's good.
I almost just... Everyone was bummed, you know, ESPN, CBS, the pilot, and everyone's looking at me, and I'm just like, oops, sorry. Sorry I threw off your ballast. So back to you. You were in California, and so like many of our best and brightest here in Maine, you got a great education in Maine, you grew up, you wanted to get away from Maine for a little bit, and then what ultimately brought you back?
Well, when I was in Montana, that's when I got into solar, and I ended up meeting my lovely wife, Holly, who had two boys.
Great.
And she came back and saw what Maine was all about, and we were getting ready to have our own portion of that family. And I mean, it's one thing to be out west, but I think most folks that grew up in Maine know about how strong a communities that we have here, how kid-centered they are. And we wanted
great
our
place
kids
to raise family, yeah.
Yep, to know where they come from.
So when you came back, and you know, from Montana and California, and your background academically in engineering, what was the catalyst for really gravitating towards solar or renewable energy as opposed to other kind of environmental stuff?
Well, I've been involved. I started my company in Montana before I moved back, and I got into it. Just a strong pull. I mean, growing up in Maine and around being outside a lot, I mean, it's very clear the connection between what we do and how it affects the things around us. And so it's been something I've been committed to, and it was great to get into a line of work that melded my, you know, appreciation and passion for the environment with my engineering background. And so we moved back. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, if you're trying to figure out a place to put your solar business, Pittsfield, Maine probably is not at the top of the charts. And so, but I have an engineering background. I have a teaching background as well. So those are the types of jobs that are around. We hope we made it fly. Right. With solar, but knew we had a backup plan if that wasn't, you know, what we hoped it would be.
And talk about your teaching a little bit. You know, where and what was your interest in education and teaching?
I've always loved kids. I, you know, as a high school kid, I used to coach and referee, you know, basketball games and skiing and things like that. And so I've always enjoyed kids. And after I did some engineering down here, I actually got into teaching in the Westbrook School District. And when I went out to California, it was to do environmental education. But, you know, I love kids. I mean, I think, you know, the recharge that you get from working with kids and being able to open their eyes to new things is pretty impressive. And so I ended up actually getting my master's degree in education when I was out west. I worked in inner city schools out there for a little while. Before I moved back, I taught here at Deering for a bit as well. So, but I missed the hands-on stuff, and solar offered that. As well as a few other sustainable building things that I've been doing. It was a great mix. And I actually was able to kind of meld the two of them, Kennebec Valley Community College up in Fairfield, had gotten a big grant from the Department of Energy to train technical schools, colleges, et cetera, in integrating solar into their curricula. And so I was doing some work for the DOE through KVCC. And I've continued to do some private training for a solar company out in Colorado, and we train code officials in New York State as well. So it's been a nice mix to be able to kind of juggle a couple of different things and keep it fresh.
Well, talk about your company, InSource Renewables. And by the way, the website is insourcerenewables.com. And what is the business and what is the focus and mission of InSource Renewables?
Yeah, so we're a solar contracting firm. We specialize in solar electric, solar heating, as well as heat pump technologies for residential and commercial applications. So we're like a number of other solar companies across the state that do that type of work. We have a very strong community focus. You know, we're looking at economic development. You know, my town, Pittsfield, is a much different place than it was when I grew up there. And, you know, I'm 41. I'm starting to feel like the old fella that talks about kids these days and how that town used to be. But, you know, we're looking at how do we catalyze economic development through the energy sector. And so we are a company, there are 8 of us right now. We have a great mix of folks like me who grew up here and moved back because they wanted to raise their kids here that work for us. We're keeping some of the 20-somethings around that would otherwise leave the state, and got a really nice, talented team of folks that are really committed to the area and to what we do.
Yeah, we do that with Emily in the booth. She's our 20-something. We don't let her leave, and we have the same feeling. We want to keep our 20-something. And for the first few months when we kept her locked in the building, she resisted. And it was crazy. But we said, no, you're our 20-something. So isn't that right, Emily?
Yeah, I make my home right here in the booth.
Right here in the booth. And every once in a while, she'll wander around the building at night. And that's how we keep our 20-somethings right here.
That's it.
They make it fun because you have to, you know, update them on the old movie references.
Yeah.
And the, you got the George Harrison thing. I'm sure the Beatles transcend kind of the generations. But
yeah, we get into discussions on like the Beatles versus Bieber all the time. And they're real artistic debates.
Oh, totally.
No, I'm kidding. I don't think Sully likes the Biebs. You don't like the Biebs, do you?
I don't. You're right. Not
okay.
A fan.
Not a fan. Okay. So a wise millennial.
A disbeliever.
A disbeliever. We should trademark that. Can we trademark that?
Sure.
A disbeliever?
I said it. How are you getting the trademark?
It's my radio show. I can say it. You know, it's like, you know, all the great ideas. So with InSource Renewables, let's talk about, you know, I understand the business, but what is the climate here in Maine? Over the last few weeks, there's been some bills being considered and legislation having to do with solar. Were you involved in that in any way relative to at least testifying? And I'm sure you followed it because it impacts the industry. But let's talk about kind of the legislative regulatory climate here in Maine relative to solar. And then we can talk about kind of the need and the opportunity.
So this is going to be on the radio. So I have to pick my language correctly, right?
Well, it'll be on the radio, and not only that, but then we put it on iTunes, and not only that, then it's streamed. So we like to call it a potential audience of 4 billion. So
I just want to make sure you don't have to put it explicit on the podcast when you post it.
Well, yeah, we'll have to post the E. If so, let's just keep it. This is WLOB.
That's right.
Superstation.
That's right.
1310 AM and 100.5. We're on FM now.
Yeah.
So it's so clear. So talk about legislative regulatory climate here in Maine.
Sure, I joke because it's been heavy. I mean, I'm also the chair of the Committee on Renewable Energy, which is the solar trade group in the state. So I've basically had a tent in Augusta.
Wow.
for about
so this
weeks.
Was a softball question. This was underhand. It was like, come on, Vaughn, hit this one out of the park. Do you know anything about legislative regulatory issues? Bang.
I do, and we actually had a discussion about where things are last night, or you know, Thursday night, second in Freeport. We're running a series of them because there is a lot of confusion in the public right now. So basically what's happened in Maine is that
confusion or ignorance?
Well,
are people confused or they just don't take the time to learn?
No, I think it's confused. I mean, this session especially was very challenging. I mean, it's been a buildup of 5 years of working on policy because Maine has been far behind the rest of the region. Most folks don't realize that the Northeast sector of the United States is one of the fastest growing in the solar industry across the country. And we've seen, you know, 20% job growth year over year in the national solar industry. And in Maine, it's been quite flat. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that we haven't had any state level policy. There are a lot of states that will incentivize solar to help it get its foothold so that it will develop into its own self-sustaining industry and capitalize on the federal tax credit that we have right now. Maine hasn't done that. I mean, we 2010, we stopped funding those types of programs. And 2010 happens to be the time at which we've seen a steep decline in the cost of solar electric systems. And so where other states have been seeing this job growth and they're good paying technical jobs that keep our, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math students here in the state, Maine's just been pretty flat. And so, you know, we've tried a number of different ways, looking at other states and trying to say, well, this is working in this state. Let's look at doing it in Maine. And, you know, we would have a majority, but not the supermajority, to overcome the governor's veto year over year, no matter whether it was a rebate like we had in the past, whether it was figuring out other types of incentives to do it. So we actually engage in a discussion. One of the challenges that we have is that the industry, we have 40 companies, but there are a bunch of small companies. I mean, you know, there are eight of us. You know, we got a lot of small companies that are a guy in a pickup truck and maybe a helper. And so we don't have the type of political clout in Augusta that a lot of others do. And so, you know, we've run into the challenge of when we go in, we're often against the utilities because the utilities want to see more and more energy get used because, you know, Central Maine Power, Mira Maine, their revenues are based on the amount of electricity that gets delivered. And so, you know, it's within their own best interest to be able to see more and more being used and less being offset by technologies like solar. So we actually were able to, in the last session, work on a piece of legislation that actually had the utilities and the solar industry, the ratepayer advocate who was appointed by the governor to advocate on the behalf of all ratepayers, facilitated that. We had municipalities that were on board. We had the environmental advocacy that was on board with a really innovative bill that would have done a couple things. It would have helped Maine capitalize on utilization of solar energy and would have decreased the cost to ratepayers by doing so. It was estimated that the bill would save somewhere between $50 and $100 million to all ratepayers, not just the folks that were putting solar on
the roof. You failed to mention one other supporter, Steve-O. I was on board. Do you know that, and for our listeners out there, for the millions of listeners, or potential billions,
yes,
if you include internet streaming. We don't laugh at that, Vaughn. There are billions of people that are listening. But the lights, the soundboard, the microphone, it's powered by solar today. Well, maybe a little cloudy today. But we have the only net positive building in New England right here. We just opened the Viridescent building. It produces three times the power it uses. And because we're on one account, that power in the solar we have here powers this building. And so I don't want to say it's a disclosure issue, but I am predisposed and biased on behalf of solar. We have two electric vehicle charging stations. One of them was the third in the entire state years ago, which, as you know, from living in the West, you can't go to like a parking lot at a beach without seeing, you know, EV charging stations with 50 units. We still have like a dozen in the whole state, but I digress. But it's all interconnected. We're kind of Jurassic in our energy policy and sustainable and renewable policy. So I'm right there on board. So what happened, how did you, since you were in a tent and you were kind of leading a big part, how did you fail so badly, Vaughn, in terms of the legislative success over the last few weeks in Augusta?
We did not respond as well to the disinformation and misinformation as we didn't expect it. I mean, a lot of the stuff that happened, I mean, there were two opponents, the governor's office, which we knew was going to happen, as well as the out-of-state solar companies that saw Maine as what we were crafting as being a threat to their model outside of the state. We knew those two. We've known that for a long time. What we were a little blindsided by were the exaggeration of numbers. I mean, the last day right before the final vote, we lost by two votes. We had a major industrial company come in and say that this bill would increase their electricity prices by over $300,000 per year to a bunch of the moderates who are sitting on the fence on this. The public advocate himself, which in his analysis has to be conservative because it's for the ratepayers, estimated that the increase in cost for someone using the amount of electricity that mill did was, and I'm not leaving zeros off here, right, $15,000 a year. And so, I mean, we had just numbers that were thrown out there and some games that took place behind the scenes that really turned this into a partisan issue that's not a partisan issue. And so, it was...
Everything these days, Vaughn, how naive, how innocent of you, is a partisan issue. It doesn't matter the facts. You're talking about numbers and exaggeration. What you should have said is liars, liars, pants on fire. Right, Deb?
Oh, yes, certainly.
Because you primarily it's your tribe. It's your tribe.
Yeah, it's the conservatives. My tribe. It certainly is.
Deb and I have, we jest.
Yes, we do.
But
or joust, whatever.
Well,
if we
want to go, you know, with jousting swords or whatever they do during medieval times, we can joust. I think with my arm reach, I think I would have a jousting advantage.
This is why this glass in front of us.
Yeah. There is, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I want to be clear. Like, the partisanship was not about – we had a lot of Republican support for this bill.
Oh, good.
And we had a lot of – I mean, there were two Republicans that got beat down in their caucus over putting forward the amendment that led to this. So it wasn't the partisanship in terms of one group of individuals that represent themselves as Republicans or Democrats. It was the leadership of the party basically going around and threatening members of their own party that if they supported this bill.
Which party is that?
In this case,
not in this case, Vaughn. We're not going to get into climate change or gun control or any other or social rights or transgender. You know, we're not going to do that.
No, we're
I
not.
Want to, but we would need 9 hours.
Yes, we would.
And we would need to shut off Deb's mic. But it's not just random kind of differences. There are groups out there that, for whatever reason, are impervious to science, to facts, to math. And Deb, you're breathing. I can hear you breathing before you spoke, Deb. I've got a control over here that can shut you down. So, okay, be careful.
Wouldn't that bill have generally subsidized your industry for a period of time?
It depends on what you call it. There's nothing that's shown that it would be a subsidy.
Nothing?
There was no rebate. There was no tax credit. There were no tax incentives that were put there. From a state level, there was nothing along those lines. What it did, the challenge in this, I think that folks have a hard time. It's a complex bill. But there was a lot of argument about free market economy, right? Mm-hmm. Like that we need this to be a free market economy. Well, we're dealing with a regulated monopoly. By its very definition, it's not a free market. Like if I'm a homeowner and I want to participate in the free market for solar, I'd have to pay $50 a month to participate in that market. We've got people whose electricity bills are $80 a month. Mm-hmm. So it's not really a free market. It was about redefining how a technology that's very different. Rooftop solar is very different because it's not just a power plant you put somewhere and it generates electricity and then you deliver it somewhere. Right. It's actually offsetting. It's right, you know, right now, all the solar electricity that you're generating is running all of the equipment that's in here right now. CMP doesn't even know today, right, that you have solar because it's not being pushed back out. And so it's a very different technology. And I think there's a lot of us thinking about 5 years ago, solar being expensive, and there's the thought that it's only for rich people and a few of these things that just aren't true in the market that exists today. And I think, you know, I always joke, you know, you probably, I mean, being in this world, you'll appreciate this. Like, you know, when I was in high school, we'd get the music 5 years later, right? Everything was 5 years later. Everything was 10 years later. You know, if you ever went to Boston wearing the stuff that was cool in Pittsfield back in the 80s.
Well, Deb has a rotary phone at home.
I do,
so
actually.
So she isn't the person you want to calibrate, you know, contemporary science to. Again, I joke.
Yes.
But, I mean, part of it is the technology of solar, part of it is the economics, but part of it is just the thinking. And as an example, our newest building here at TideSmart, we had to go before the planning board. And this is something listeners probably take for granted, but when you drive down your street or drive down any street, Deb Street, any street, you drive down the street and virtually all residential and commercial buildings, because of building code and zonings, are either parallel or perpendicular to the street, because that was kind of the history. That's how that made people comfortable. Conformity made people comfortable. After World War II, when there was building booms and there were giant tracks, housing tracks, from an airplane, they all look the same, and it's all okay because that makes us comfortable. For solar to be most efficient, everyone knows the sun rises in the east, sets in the west, but what most people don't think about is, depending on your latitude and longitude, there is something called solar south, which is slightly off-center of east-west. And a couple of degrees either way, over time, it projects out to be a huge economic issue. So when we went to the town and we wanted to build our building, which looks diagonal to the street, there was a little bit of pushback from some people, kind of like, well, can you make it parallel? Can you make it perpendicular? And it's like, no, because we're going to be net positive. And It's not just the solar collection, but in our case, we have high-performing thermal windows. It's the effect of the windows being, in effect, the furnace. So even the education of that is something that it may not be the technical part of solar and it may not be the financial, but having local communities and planning boards and councils aware of that requires change thinking, right? Have you noticed our diagonal building there?
I have.
She's a honey. Bill Green was out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
He did a Bill Green's Maine. And you know what? We had a drone involved.
Very cool.
Yeah. There was dronage.
I like dronage.
Anyone that goes to Bill Green's Maine on NBC affiliate, Channel 6 here, go look up the story on the Viridescent House.
Very cool.
It's excellent.
Well, the funny thing in this is we talk about it being a change.
Right.
Actually, we knew how to build buildings. I mean, we didn't build them tight. But as far as orientation, I mean, the Salt Box in New England is a classic passive solar house. So, right. I mean, we knew it and we changed it. And we got to get back to where it came from.
Well, we knew it. We changed it. And you also go to Europe. And I go over to Europe quite a bit.
Yes, you do.
In Asia. I was just in China.
Yeah.
I was in Shenzhen. And I was in Hong Kong and Singapore. But here's the other thing. When I was in Moscow, very popular in Moscow, Vaughn. By the way, we have Vaughn Woodruff here. He's the owner of InSource Renewables. You're listening to TideSmart Talk on WLOB 1310 AM and 100.5. You go over to Europe where, you know, our country is less than 250 years old. But you go over to Europe where, you know there's civilization and there's structure that goes back thousands of years. So in America, like when we build buildings, residential and commercial, a lot of our building practices have tracked along with our very myopic, very short-sighted, very provincial, parochial, stupid approach to building sometimes, where the building standards are based on a 20-year or 30-year mortgage. And the reason why some building supplies just last 20 or 30 years and you end up almost rebuilding your house every 20 or 30 years is because we're short-sighted. You go to Europe and they've got castles. So they're playing the long game. You know, I don't even want to get into pyramids. I mean, those things are solid. But in Europe, they're kind of like, well, you know, we're playing the long game. And, you know, Germany, over half of Germany is, solar efficient. And so you go to other countries. Amsterdam, fabulous place. I love the canals. But they have a different approach. And here we have all this academic understanding, all this science in America, and we've been so energy dependent, particularly in the Mideast, which has led to military issues and economic conflict, why we can't figure out energy efficiency and independence, and why we can't figure out there's like the sun up there, and it is the biggest heat power source in the universe. And why we can't just go, yeah, that makes sense. There's a sun up there, and it shines, you know, high percentage of time. We can convert that thing up there to clean, renewable power. Let's just commit to it. It bugs me. Why can't we do this, Vaughn?
Boy.
Let's do it.
You're prodding me.
I am.
We know this. I mean, solar started here. It spread from here. Why? Because it costs people money, and I don't mean it costs people who put in solar money. It means that it's a threat to the folks who make a lot of money right now, and there's a lot of money that's being pushed. We saw it even in this legislation, the amount of money that's being pushed at politicians to make decisions for, you know, that help support the status quo in energy policy is unbelievable, and it's despicable.
Is there anyone you can point out specifically that's despicable? You mentioned our governor earlier. I know he listens to the show. Deb, when you're talking to your friend Governor LePage, does it ever come up, the Steve-O show? Once in a while when you're over his house, over at the Blaine house, just kicking it?
Yeah.
You know, talking about Shifty and Lefty and all the big issues we have going on
here. How did you know?
Well, it feels like you're on his policy team, both you and my good friend Ray Richardson. Ray is always talking about the governor. Does the governor still call in on the morning show?
He was in today.
The governor,
in the studio.
He was literally in
for 2 hours, yeah.
How was that?
He was asked.
He was asked. Not how did it happen, but how was the show?
It was great.
Was he bombastic? Did he insult people?
No.
Did he talk about Trump?
No. Nope.
What a visionary he was?
No. Nope.
How wonderful?
No. Nope. Talked about local issues.
Sharing donuts with Chris Christie? Did he talk about that?
No. No.
Because I know they both love Frosty Donuts.
Well, who doesn't?
Oh, God, I love Donuts. Damn. Frosty Donuts. You know, a lot of people are like, what's the hole in the wall place? There's another donut.
Holy
place.
Donut?
Holy Donut.
Oh.
Yeah. And those are made out of like potato.
Mm.
Yeah. And in our house, there's a big debate between Holy Donut and Frosty's. And I'm a Frosty's man. I got to tell you.
Yeah,
I'm just Frosty.
I agree.
But, you know, Chris Christie and Governor LePage, I'm sure if they don't talk about it, they secretly, I'm sure.
Of course.
Enjoy a good donut. So, but yeah, why is our governor against him? Have you ever talked to him? Or is he accessible to the issue or just feels like he's obstinate?
I mean, he's spoken pretty venomously about our industry. I mean, basically told us to pack up and leave the state and told us, you know, basically said we were bamboozling the folks of Maine, which he doesn't know us, so I don't know how he can make the claims. You know, I want to know, did Governor LePage talk about the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is...
Today?
Or does he ever? He doesn't. He hardly ever talks about ALEC.
I don't think I've ever heard him talk about it.
But he was a keynote speaker at their national convention. And ALEC is a organization that basically puts corporations and legislators in the same room to craft policy that would be implemented at the state-by-state level, which, you know, my family's long-term Republican and states' rights have always been a pretty big issue. And to think that, you know, we've got corporations in there trying to affect state outcomes on a national level is a little bit challenging, especially when you look at the money that's behind organizations like that. So, you know, I don't know what that connection is. He doesn't talk about it much, but it would be nice to hear from him.
Well, you've revealed it on the Steve-O show. This is late-breaking news.
I'll have to check it out.
Well, when you're over his house this weekend, what are you guys doing? Picnic?
You are
spending time with the governor this weekend.
No, I'm not actually. No,
you're not.
No.
Well, we're gonna.
But
put,
when I do,
we're gonna put a tail on you.
Okay,
that's what we do. That's the kind of investigative journalism we practice here at Tide Smart Talk. But when you do, you know, I've disagreed with Governor LePage on a daily basis. The thing I don't dispute is I really believe he's trying to do what he thinks is best compared to Trump, where I think Trump is just a phony idiot. And I think, Trump was scamming people with Trump U and he's scamming people. And so I think Trump knows better and he's just scamming. I honestly believe Paul LePage, for all of his rhetoric and bluster and myopic idiocracy, he believes he's trying to do the right thing. So there are some issues where I just want to give him a big hug and go, come on, it's okay. I know you've had a tough background. I know you've got a chip on your shoulder the size of the Rock of Gibraltar. I know those things. And I almost had an opportunity 2 months ago. I was on a plane with him. I sat right across from him. It was the craziest thing, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
You should have.
I know I should have. He went to Iowa on behalf of his donut buddy, Chris Christie. And so he went to the Iowa caucus, apparently, and I was in Chicago flying back to Portland, Maine. It was like 11 at night or 10 at night, and we were at the United Gate. I believe it was Chicago. It may have been New Jersey. But he, in his security detail, which I think he's got a couple state police assigned to him, were standing there, and he looked over at me, and I looked over at him, and I gave him a look. It was nonverbal communication. You know, the way we do it in the jungle.
Yes.
Animals just look at each other and go,
yes.
You know, one look from a zebra to gazelle is like, I'm either going to eat you or there's a water source over that hill. You go down the tree, go to the right, and it's a little brook. It's tasty, right? Animals don't need words. They can just look. So I'm looking at Governor LePage, and just like I'm looking at Sully right here, and the look was, I know what you did.
Ooh.
And he looked at me like, oh, You're the Steve-O.
Ah.
Yeah, seriously. And the state police who were with him, they tensed up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Not quite code red, but code pink or something. Something like, you know, the threat level was
yellow alert.
And there were a couple of points where I just wanted to jump over and talk to him. It would have been awkward. It would have breached all kinds of airplane protocol.
Yeah, jumping but, probably wouldn't have been a
good
thing.
But I just want to say to him, come on, Governor. You know, we got 1.3 million people. Maine has a weak, underpowered economic engine. It's not really anyone's fault because we settled hundreds of years ago. We've got 35,812 square miles, 488 municipalities. We got huge, vast space. And for the old economy, it worked. But for the new economy, we need density and efficiency. And energy is a huge component. Healthcare, education also. We need better policy. But the flight attendant said, sir, sit down. I'm like, flight attendant, I want to go talk to the governor of the state. Sir, buckle up or we're going to have a problem.
Oh, dear.
And I don't want to be that guy.
No.
Because that guy shows up on the news when the police meet the plane mm-hmm. and you're taking off and you're like, hey.
Yeah.
I just wanted extra peanuts or,
it's
hey,
bad PR.
I wanted to berate the governor of my state, but I didn't get a chance. And then we get off the plane and they whisked him away.
Well, if you're sitting next to each other, you could have done the, hey, so what do you do?
Yeah.
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 Well.
But when you talk to the governor, will you ask, can you get him on the show?
I will try to get him on the show, yes.
Yeah. Can Ray help?
I will ask him.
Talk to Ray Ray. But I would like to see if Ray would maybe speak on my behalf.
Okay.
You know, and we would welcome him as a guest.
Yes.
There would be donuts, M&Ms.
There you go.
There would be, you know, he could bring his whole security detail in here, all the guys I saw on the plane. Okay. I digressed. We've got Vaughn Woodruff here. He's owner of InSource Renewables, an advocate of solar here in the state of Maine. Where do we go now with legislation? So given what happened in the last few weeks, given what happened in the second year of a legislative session, which it's tough to produce and get past new legislation, what's the current state of the regulatory thing, and then what's the next step?
So that legislation will come back. I mean, there's been a lot of hard work in getting people to agree that don't usually agree, and that, you know, it's hard to just throw that away. But in the interim, you know, the big challenge that we have right now is that the mechanism with which we currently interact with the grid is called net metering. And, you know, you have it here for the building, right? Where when you're generating extra, you put it on the grid and you get it, you know, you get credits that you trade for electricity at other times. That policy is being reviewed by the Public Utilities Commission that has three LePage appointees at the head of it, and there are folks that are very concerned that given the stance that the governor has taken and given some of the testimony that the PUC offered during this last legislative session, that there's potentially some threat to net metering as it currently exists. So
potentially? They're his appointees? He's adamantly against it and there's threat? I'd say there's almost certainty, right?
But I want to give their individuals that are there to act on, you know, the behalf of the people of Maine.
So you're advocating, so you don't want to upset them, but you're winking at me like, yeah.
I'm not winking.
They're terrible. I'm kidding. I'm somewhat
naive too, because I'm, you know, I grew up in Central Maine in a small town, and we're taught about citizen democracy and how things work. And I want to believe in the best of Maine, and I've seen some of the best of Maine, but we've seen a little bit of the worst of Maine from the policy standpoint recently as well.
You still believe in the tooth fairy? Do you still believe? Because I would love
yes.
to. I love to. Are you kidding? Easter, it's amazing what a bunny can bring. Bunny brings candy. God, who doesn't want to believe in that?
But,
I know.
But I'm worried if we get apathetic about it that we don't expect more. You go down to Augusta and see the lobbyist culture that goes there, and there's some things that take place that there are other folks that say this is not in line with how ethics work and the rules that we have on the book, and they just say it's part of the culture. And I get worried about getting apathetic about it because
are you kidding? In the rotunda, when the sessions break, on one side of the House and the state senators come in the middle and you throw in 50 lobbyists and you go around the state house and every major law firm has lobbyists and outside people, it's incestuous. It's not the culture. It's like blatant. And they're all sitting there, well, I'll do this, you'll do this. Oh, yeah, well, you hire me when I'm done. Okay, I'll hire you. I'll give you this. Let's go have dinner. It's not the best example of citizen government, of government for the people. And would you agree with that, Deb?
I certainly agree with that, 100%. You know?
And I think that and one of the challenges we have are with the term limits here in Maine, and for many new legislators on both the House and the State Senate, they're well-intentioned, but you know, many times they come from roles or jobs that kind of ill-equip them for some of the more technical legislation, and they just don't know. And so they gravitate to these sharks and piranha that show up in the rotunda and go, "Hi, I'm Fred from Winkle, Dinkle, and Hinkle, the big law firm, and I've got a whole position paper for you, and here's why this is good, and here's why this." And they never really think, well, who's paying Hinkle, Dinkle, and Winkle? I don't want to name any real law firms. You know, we don't need any of that. We don't need that. Not since what we went through with air traffic control over the U.S. Open. We don't need any kind of government oversight issues. But we don't have we have got well-intentioned people. But until we have more competent people running for office, more competent people serving that understand economics, finance, engineering, healthcare. We have a high percentage of people at Augusta that are nice people, mm-hmm. that are committed to government. They've sacrificed to run for office. But these are the same people that nobody would pick to run a large corporation. And with a $3 billion annual budget approximately, and with complex laws, Maine has a lot of complex issues going on. And we've got people showing up at Augusta that really wouldn't otherwise be running an ice cream stand, mm-hmm. if not for the fact that, you know, their 300 neighbors and friends said, "Hey, we think you should go to Augusta."
So, Vaughn, would you consider running for office?
No.
You can announce it right here. No, why not?
Because I do a lot better service for my community by creating jobs right now.
Is it not possible to do both? Because, you know, our legislature is a part-time thing, unlike some states where it's so big that it's full-time.
I already work 80, 90 hours a week. So it's a culture that's a challenge. I mean, I used to teach in inner city schools. You go into one of those things thinking you're going to change the world and you're going to do it differently than everyone. I mean, it becomes a culture. And so I think there's some efforts that are going on to kind of coalesce candidates that are looking at that and trying to take a comprehensive look at how we make that a little bit more responsible. But I mean, right now we've got some pressing issues in Pittsfield that require jobs more than they need somebody in Augusta.
Okay, I'm going to tell you a story that may change your mind. We've got Vaughn Woodruff here, young Vaughn Woodruff, so innocent, so naive. No, I'm kidding, of course. But 2 years ago, I was registered Democrat. It was like, the party, as we like to call it. I align more with social principles and policy of Democrats, but in essence, I'm also fiscally conservative. I also believe in kind of smart. I just want smart policy. And I have friends who are Democrats, friends that are Republicans, and it doesn't matter to me. We have real issues. And in business, we don't define our positions by, partisan position. It's like, you have a challenge, let's fix it. But I was registered Democrat, and since I've parachuted out, now I'm independent or, technically unenrolled. But 2 years ago, I went to the Democratic State Convention, and we had a candidate forum with Mark Eaves, who is the head of the House, the majority leader, and Justin Alfont, the head of the state Senate. They're both Democrats. And there were like 50 candidates in the room for House open House seats and state Senate. And in the middle of their presentation, this little old lady raised her hand. And I believe it was for a state Senate seat. It may have been for a House seat, but I believe it was state Senate. And she's like, I'm running unopposed because you guys told me you wanted me to run, but I've got a real problem. And one of the two guys, Alfon or Eve, said, "Oh, what's your problem?" "Well, all these outside groups want me to file disclosure or position papers on where I am. And relative to tax policy, they're looking for all kinds of numbers and all kinds of math. And I told Charlie, who was like a Democratic operative, that I don't do math. And now they want me to do math." And it was either Alfon or Eve said, okay, we'll help you with that. Go down to conference room C at the end of this meeting, and one of our staff people will fill out and do the math. This person ultimately became elected, and this person ultimately, in this current session, is voting on and creating laws in our state. And if you met this person, who, again, a lovely human being, and she appeared to be a grandmother, if she was at the age where I think she probably had grandkids, no disparagement. But she has no It is a travesty to think of her voting on things, trying to understand things, because the criteria was whatever, and we'll call her Susie. Susie cares about Maine. Okay, that's okay. Susie, her neighbors love Susie. Yeah, that's okay. Susie should go to the legislature because she loves. No! And Susie shouldn't run Unum or IDEX or a big company, or Susie shouldn't be the head of any technical organization, because Susie shouldn't be. She's not competent. But we've lost the sight of competency in government. So, with that, we're going to announce that Vaughn Woodruff is running. Let's see what Senate District Pittsfield is in. I'm kidding. You just said
we've got capable legislators up where I am. So.
Whoa, well played. You are a politician. You
I'm not
are
a politician. I know these folks.
Okay, so if you know those folks, then Susie isn't from your area. Hey, in the last minute before we wrap up, we've got Vaughn Woodruff here. He's the owner of InSource Renewables. He's an advocate for solar renewable energy. What's the next step that if, you know, for our millions of listeners listening to WLOB, 1310 AM and 100.5, what would you like to leave our listeners with that they should think about or research or be aware about relative to solar and renewable, depending on wherever they live here in Maine?
Well, number one, I think the short term, we're dealing with short term hurdles. I mean, the long term projection is that solar is going to be a much bigger piece of the energy mix. I think what we need to do for the listeners is we have to help folks understand what solar jobs look like. I mean, if you look at the people of Maine, they close their eyes. They know what someone who works in the woods looks like. They know what a poor farmer looks like. You know, they know what someone who works lobster boats looks like. When they close their eyes, they don't know what a solar worker looks like. And we need to get them, especially, you know, folks from up in my part of the state and north, closing their eyes and seeing their grandkids, you know, seeing their kids, because these are the types of jobs that keep them here. And so the economic development driver for this industry is unbelievable. I mean, this bill itself would have injected over $500 million of direct investment in the state of Maine, and would have created upwards of 600 jobs, well-paying jobs. And that's it. I mean, I can't think of a single politician that ran on a platform that didn't say, we want more good-paying jobs in my district. And this is exactly what the solar industry offers for promise. It's not going to solve all of Maine's problems, but, you know, as you've alluded to, we're looking at like 1980s economic development train of thought in some places, where we bring in some big factory to employ hundreds of people in our community. That economy just is not the future of Maine, and we've seen it for the last, you know, three decades. And so I think we need to look at these little pieces, and solar is one of those little pieces that injects a significant amount of community benefit and addresses a lot of issues that are really central to the state right now.
Well, thank you for being here today and Thanks. Listening to the blimp story and listening to my airplane trip with Governor LePage, Deb's good friend.
Very exciting.
Very exciting. And we'd love to have you come back sometime.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate
Great.
It.
We've had Vaughn Woodruff here in the studio. Their website for InSource Renewables is InSource, InSourceRenewables.com. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM, and also 100.5, the sweet, sweet sound of FM. Please join us next week. Thank you.